This morning our talk will be given by Bamisui Zen Dharma teacher Julie Nelson.
So imagine you're sitting in a darkened movie theater and there's a movie playing that's really engrossing. Maybe it's a drama, maybe it's an adventure, maybe a romance, maybe a post-apocalyptic scenario. But it's totally absorbing. You feel like you're seeing what the characters are seeing and feeling what the characters are feeling. And then there's a little glitch. The house lights come up. Maybe just briefly. But for just a moment there, you realize that there's a movie on the screen and you're in a human body sitting in a cushioned theater seat surrounded by other human bodies. There's a few passages from the book that we're reading for this retreat that reminded me of that scenario. Sunryu Suzuki says, "When you are sitting in the middle of your own problem, which is more real to you, your problem or you yourself? The awareness that you are here, right now, is the ultimate fact. This is the point you will realize by Zazen practice." I first got a flavor of this about 20 years ago now, when life as I knew it ended, my life. A couple years earlier, I'd been a mother of two young children, a wife, tenured assistant professor. And then in 1997, it all came apart. I was still a mom of a couple young kids with the obligations of financial support and everything that implied. But I was in the middle of a divorce, and I was suing the university for an unfair decision to not give me tenure. So I had no job. And I didn't know anything about Zen then. Zen didn't actually come until a few years later. But as part of a decision to start taking care of myself, I decided to have some elective surgery. And an adult ed center near me offered a class, Prepare for Surgery, Heal Faster, which offered some guided meditations. And what I found was that the practice of meditation also helped with the panic that I was feeling. I'd have frequent visions of myself unable to find a job, homeless, you know, in the gutter, not able to provide a home for my kids. But sitting in meditation, sometimes that would come up and it would reach its crescendo and then it would start to diminish. And I would notice that I'd actually slipped into starting to think about lunch. That it actually came and went. I didn't have to be in that panic movie all the time. I could watch it come and watch it go. And then I could get up and do what needed to be done. I was recently reminded of this by another experience, which felt like I got kicked in the head with a horse. Some of you might identify with this. November 9th of this year, I woke up at 3 a.m., checked the results. And my overwhelming feeling for a while there was, wow, the world is just not what I thought it was. This nation is just not what I thought it was. And the corollary seemed to be, I've got to get out there and fix it. I've got to get this thing back on track. So there's these times when we feel like it's not only what we need to do, but somehow our obligation to run around and do something. Suzuki also writes a little bit before that passage I previously read to you. Suppose your children are suffering from a hopeless disease. I can't imagine any situation that would make me feel more like I've got to do something, I've got to do something now. You do not know what to do. You cannot lie in bed. Normally, the most comfortable place for you would be a warm, comfortable bed. But now, because of your mental agony, you cannot rest. You may walk up and down, in and out, but this does not help. Actually, the best way to relieve your mental suffering is to sit in Zazen, even in such a confused state of mind and bad posture. If you have no experience of sitting in this kind of difficult situation, you are not a Zen student. No other activity will appease your suffering. In other restless positions, you have no power to accept your difficulties. But in the Zazen posture, which you have acquired by long, hard practice, your mind and body have great power to accept things as they are, whether they are agreeable or disagreeable. So for a while, I was certainly in just this confusion. And of course, I'm still confused. But I started spontaneously. I didn't really think about it, but my daily practice for a long time had been to sit just in the morning, one period. And I started to sit in the evening as well, without really making a decision about it, just what I needed to do. And I sat and I faced into that confusion. And one of the important things, particularly our teacher, Josh Bartok, has taught me that when everything is muddy and confused, that's not nothing. Every time it's a specific muddiness, a specific confusion. If everything is gray, it's a specific shade of gray. And so as I sat more with that confusion and with this feeling of the world is just not what I thought it was, after a while, sort of the foreground and background of that picture changed. Still the same phrase, but instead of, I've got to get out there and fix this world, I realized that the universe was still universing. And maybe it's what I thought about it that was causing me a lot of the suffering. Now, this doesn't mean inactivity. It doesn't mean doing nothing. But I think Suzuki knew a lot about where real activity comes from. So let me read another passage from his book. He writes, calmness of mind does not mean you should stop your activity. Real calmness should be found in activity itself. We say, it is easy to have calmness in inactivity. It is hard to have calmness in activity. But calmness in activity is true calmness. So I think if I'd gone and started my activity from that initial feeling, it would have been motivated by a lot of fear, a lot of hatred, a lot of me versus them, despising other people. I don't think that's probably very helpful. So I was able to turn on, have the lights come on in that movie theater a little bit. The post-apocalyptic scenes were on the screen. And I've sat here at this sashin. This image has come back to me a few times. Yesterday I was sitting and one of my trusty, dusty old stories that I tell myself a lot about how my life is lacking in some certain feature that I really can't be happy without. I was sitting and it came up and I came across the line, mental secretions recently, and I find that very helpful. So my mind was secreting the story about the things that I lack. And a few minutes of that went on and I realized, oh, that's kind of the trailer. For the movie. But I can say, no, I don't think I want to watch that feature film today. Thank you very much. And let it go. And I've noticed that with other of my habitual stories, that um, sometimes they'll show up in what I think of not only a movie, but full opera mode. I mean, live people, tremendous music. I've never been to an opera, but I could imagine that this thing is live, three-dimensional. Everything's going on. The more I sit with it and see it come and go, sometimes it shrinks down to a TV screen. One time I recall it was a cartoon. I mean, it wasn't even human characters. It got more and more two-dimensional. And the operas and the feature films certainly show up, but Zazen seems to be some way of containing that, bringing us back to the body and the breath. So let me read what I started out reading, but a little bit longer passage. When you are sitting in the middle of your own problem, which is more real to you, your problem or you yourself? The awareness that you are here, right now, is the ultimate fact. This is the point you will realize by Zazen practice. In continuous practice, under a succession of agreeable and disagreeable situations, you will realize the marrow of Zen and acquire its true strength. I am so grateful for this practice. Thank you.
So please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue.
Thanks for your talk. This really resonated with me, especially over the last day, because I had to go back into Boston and leave Sachin because of some issues that I was having that I had to deal with. And it was really, it just pulled me in, and I made the conscious decision to leave all of my stuff here so that I wouldn't be tempted to just run away. I was like, oh man, these problems are so big, I need to deal with them right now. But I left all my stuff here, so. what I really liked, what you said about even like the worst muddiness has this shade of gray, and I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate on that.
I heard this that teaching that Josh mentioned at a retreat some years ago, and I'd always thought of the grayness or depression or nothing happening as being a failure. Yeah, that somehow I was not getting through to what was really here. If what I'm experiencing is this gray, this dull, this muddiness, that's actually just this. That's this. Just this too, is that muddiness. It's the it may feel like you've been someplace before. It's not the same thing. It's not the same muddiness as yesterday. It's not the same confusion as yesterday. It's its own unique color, shape, texture. And often for me, feeling that in my body is my first step towards working through it. What is it in my stomach? Is it in my shoulders? Where is this confusion, feeling, whatever it is, located, and sitting with that.
For me, one of the entry points, I think, that through the body is so wonderful. But the question is, what is this? Because so often we want that.
Anybody want that?
So this wonderful reminder that there is a this here, a particular this that we can clarify, so we can be clearly confused, manifest total confusion, and no gap in that way. So that possibility, whatever is arising, is just the scenery. And it, I love what Suzuki says about through comfort and discomfort. We say, oh, I want it comfortable or uncomfortable, but it comes and goes. But at any moment, there is the possibility to be, to say yes, to be here in that very specific way. It's not sort of a general, oh, I'm in the dull place now, but what is this? What is this life right here?
And two, that the this is the Buddha nature manifesting itself as this.
Right.
So the that we want is a mental construction, a mental formation, which is also this, right? So the, it's kind of funny, you know, this and that, the thing that's actually here, the dullness maybe, and the specific way of encountering it, really being interested in a granular way. And then to realize that the wish that it wasn't here, the wish to avoid it, that's this too. And then we also, in this granular, very specific way, we look into that. So everything that's arising, you know, the wish to stay in Boston and the recognition that some past self with your name left your stuff here, which is great. So the present self goes, gotta come back. And you don't even need to speculate about who's who. Yes, we respond.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you, Julie, for telling us, sort of applying this teaching to your own personal experience. I have to say, I've always wanted an opportunity to get acquainted with you. And it's like, it fell in my lap. Thank you so much. And it helps us to take this text, which I have always thought of as rather arcane and distant, to personalize it and to find it useful, you know, right here, you know, right now. And I just want to express my appreciation to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Priya.
Thank you so much, Julie, for your talk. I really appreciated all the visuals, the pictures that you painted, and the putting us into the movie theater. I really went into the movie theater, you know, and that experience of, you know, when the lights go on, that it's made me think of this, you know, these moments when I wake up. It's like something, you know, and sometimes it's a flap across the, you know, in life, you know, we get these sort of gut-wrenching, you know, moments and then wake us up, or panic, or all these, you know, various things that you mentioned. And you made me realize again, you know, how grateful I am, because before I started practicing Zen, when those things would happen, the reactions were, no, get it away, you know, this can't be my life. This can't be, you know, and I don't want it, and, you know, all those things, and those things still come up for me, but I, because of this practice and the things that you talked about, I have a different way that is available to me to meet those things when they do arise, instead of just the one way that I had to meet it before, which was to, you know, try to get away from it or put it somewhere where it couldn't cause any more trouble, or, you know, run from it or whatever. However, but the and just the as you expressed, the gratitude for this practice, that because I was literally closing down my life, you know, as I ran from all these things, right? My life was getting narrower and narrower and smaller and smaller. Yes. Not this, not this, yes. Not that, not that. And such a gift to have this practice that expands my capacity to say yes to what whatever arises.
And I love it how a couple times you read the quotes and right at the end about the power of our practice, right? That there really is power in doing this. As we do it repeatedly, we are developing the capacity to do something that's incredibly challenging to do. And we develop that capacity by doing it when it's easy and doing it when it's hard. Every time we then come back to this posture, to this practice, it's not just central headquarters that remembers, you know, not just the mind, but the body. And what a resource that is.
Yeah, when I was listening to you talk, you know, all I could really think of here was just this resilience. And that's really not possible without the muck and the mud. That it gives you that opportunity for resilience the same way that gravity gives you the opportunity to have muscles. You know, you get to have that kind of cyclical way that it happens. I spent 3 years working in Africa doing refugee resettlement. And I would come back maybe once a year and visit, and people would always say to me, oh, it must be so sad, all the work you're doing, you must feel really depressed. And that's not what I saw, you know, just the same way in your stories, what I see is the resilience in humans, the way you keep coming back. And when you're in a situation like that, you actually, there is no doing. These people are literally, without even thinking, putting one foot in front of the other. And in some ways, you know, that just unfolds that all they're thinking about is what they'll eat for the day or how they'll avoid certain things. And in some ways, you know, we look at that as really difficult. But sometimes for me, what's difficult is when your pain can't be seen, when it's not necessarily a physical or something that's acknowledged, and that when you're feeling stuff, and that resilience that is unseen, and how you have to come back, kind of without the acknowledgement, but only with yourself. And I really felt that resilience in your story when you spoke. So thank you.
So a couple comments. I think that's an amazing story. I think one of the stories I have often kicked myself with is, why am I not doing that? Why am I not, you know, if I was a real, I would be out helping the refugees. And another thing, when I was coming on this, you know, the deal with the post-election, you know, it's not the world I was thinking, you know, and there are other people experiencing the end of the world every day. That their world is being shattered every day. It's not the unusual thing. It is the universing, you know, in brilliant beauty and in that pain. Also, you mentioned mud and muck. During this time of crisis in my life that I described, I built a very rich dream life. And in one of these dreams, I was walking with a friend of mine, and there was this like river kind of mud flat. And the phrase came, the bottom lands are fertile ground.
And the lotus grows out of the mud.
The mud and the muck.
The bottom lands are fertile
ground.
Yeah. That's good news for a lot of us.
Up here in muck, yes.
You know, Suzuki Roshi uses the word pure a lot, and it could be misleading, I think, because what he really, his real message is that everything is it, and that's, of course, our message, too. So I want to encourage everyone not to be confused by that word pure, because what it really means, I think, is direct. Mm-hmm. Here it is, right now. So if purity takes the form of depression, or frustration, or being in the muck. That's purity. What it means is nothing's excluded.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And there's so many people, and especially in this culture, who try to purify the self. You know, I will never be angry. I'm going to work on my anger. Never be angry again. You know? And I'm only going to study with people who never get angry. And oh, I'm never going to be sad. I'm never going to be afraid. Never gonna be afraid, and then they kind of walk around like, you know, and then recipe for disaster, I think.
And this resilience, you know, that comes out of meeting our difficulties and the pain. And I was really touched by the one of the quotes that Julie read about how, you know, sitting in zazen in the middle of this pain and difficulty is actually the best way of dealing with it, meeting this. And it's so counterintuitive, you know, because I immediately want to run away from the difficulties and the emotions that I don't like. You know, I want the good stuff over there. And how do I, you know, what is my strategy for minimizing this pain and difficulty that's here? But there's such value in having the sort of practice that allows us to just sit upright in the middle of this storm of emotion and difficulty, and that who would have thought that this is the best way to metabolize this suffering?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Try it.
So first step and then try.
I'm going to ask a question that I ask so many times, but I still need to hear about, is I know it's not, but it feels like the complete exception to everything that you just said, when what you're dealing with is exhaustion to the extent that when I go to the movie, the first thing I do is go to sleep. And it seems like then you're unconscious. So how are you facing it? How are you examining how it's not the same exhaustion that you had yesterday when you're not there? It feels like you're not there. It feels like I'm not there. And it's not exhaustion like, oh, I'm tired, I think I need to sleep. Mm-hmm. It's something that only some people maybe know. But it is a kind of exhaustion that is just, it to me, it's a koan for death or something. Mm-hmm. Because I'm gone.
Right.
So I know I've heard these answers all from all of you, and all those answers are so inspiring, but I don't seem to be making this progress that you were talking about. I don't seem to be, like, working on it, and so I'm building that muscle that she mentioned. I'm just, you know, I'm just going to sleep.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, this was speaks right to something Melissa was saying about the word purity in this book. I stumbled over a spot where he says that we should always be putting effort to self-improvement. And that word got me, to me, this is 180 degrees off. I mean, because I've always tried to make Zen a self-improvement project, that I am going to get better and I'm going to be somebody different than what I am right now. And exhaustion is exhaustion. I think we do need to rest. What I find relating in my experiences with that is, like when I met Sasheen, one of the parts I kick myself about the most is often I'm going to sleep and I'm in between that asleep and awake where I don't really have much control. And I can run long full-length movies, you know, feature films in there. I'm not quite alert enough to say no, but neither am I asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, on the other side of sleeping, when I'm just waking up, sometimes there's this openness. So I think part of my life is writing these films when I'm going to sleep and opening up. That there's, it's all in the cycle. It's all in that.
So everything Julie just said, and I want to add a few more things about it. I had the great good fortune, in the sense in which we're talking about it, but really, really sick. All through November and December, pretty much. It started
on November 9th. I had four different viruses going for the doctor that just, like, you know, hit me, and then an infection I had to take antibiotics for. And the first symptom was exhaustion. So I don't live with exhaustion on a daily basis like you do, Deb, but I really got to investigate it. And I found something really amazing about it. When it took over my body, I could not investigate it. And it would have been stupid to investigate it, because in that moment, I just needed to go to sleep and become unconscious. And that's part of what Julie's pointing to, that when you're tired, you're tired. So you don't always have to be picking things apart. And this dangerous word, self-improvement, you know, we've got to remember that this book was written, 45 years ago, 50 years ago, I don't know how long ago it was, 1971, so you do the math. And people are much more careful about using words to teach about Zen now than they were back then. And self-improvement is a word that catches us. And we hear people saying, you know, Zen is helping me do this, that, and the other thing, and we think, I want that. But it's not what Zen's about. Zen is about learning to be thoroughly who we already are. Thoroughly who we already are. And then to investigate it freshly every day. Who am I today? What's going on? You know, like the Dan who packed, left the stuff here, is not the Dan who went to Boston. Mm-hmm. It's really true. And the Deb that's in the movie theater nodding off and snoring, and people around are going, what? That's not the Deb who's sitting here right now. So you only get to investigate what you're able to investigate when you're awake, right? And when the same thing happens, by the way, with great pain, which, again, luckily I've only experienced intermittently. There are people who experience it all the time. When great pain arrives, that takes over. We don't have to do anything in that moment but just go, ouch, oh. That's all. So there's no improvement here. And yet, there's an opening of the heart, clarity of the mind, and a willingness to say yes that does grow. The idea is it's always been there. It's just covered over. So that's what we're releasing this. And that's why when you hear these teachings, you go, yeah, because it's the part of you that knows it that's resonating with the part of us that's saying it. And then you forget. And you need to hear it again. And that's beginner's mind. It's really beautiful. And, like, damn, why can't I be perfect?
I don't know exactly how this was woven in, but I was really touched by what, I don't know this woman's name, but
Laura.
I don't know what she said. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and it came up for me a lot in the election, too. It isn't only the most extreme things that are the most extreme, and I am not in any way trying to minimize what you said at all. But I think that's why this election really surprised a lot of people, and didn't surprise some other people. Because the most horrific things are present for the most petty situations, really. It's embarrassingly true. And you can hardly say that because it makes you seem like you have no compassion.
Yeah.
But that's
so true. We're just going to stop you because of time, that you wanted to respond.
Okay. I was going to say, I was John Tarrant wrote an article that had a line in it that made me laugh. It says, you know, wars will break out, there will be famines, diet plans will fail. And I mean, that was borderline, you know, it's a little trivial things that, you know, but somehow I still experience them all as not that.
Yeah. Pain is pain.
Diet plans fail.
No comparison.
And then Steve wanted to.
Well, I was really touched by what you were saying, Deb. And so this is such a difficult place, right, to be sick and tired and just feeling like there's nothing that I can do to fix this, to escape from this, and so desperately wanting to be otherwise.
If I never go away.
Right. So yeah. That's exactly what I wanted to say, right? And I hope you can hear this in the way that I mean it. But ultimately, there is no cure for us, right? I mean, we're gonna get sick and die, right? And we may be as good right now as we're ever gonna get, right? And so, how do we meet the life that we have in the middle of our illness desperate situation, you know? Can we meet that, and even if we're in terrible pain, which I know a little something about, right? We're alive, you know. What can I do, even if it's only just hanging on? You know, this is my life. This is Buddha's life. What if this is it? What if this actually is it? Right? It's not, you know, it's not about getting somewhere else. It's, you know, so here I am. What can I do here?
And then sometimes the answer is nothing.
No.
Sometimes it's that no.
That no, Deb. Yeah. Is also
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We want yeah. so much. Like this. And whether it's the diet plan failing or that terrible terminal diagnosis and everything in between, it doesn't make any difference. In the moment, we shout out no to the universe. And that's not the opposite of yes. Yes.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. So maybe with that, we'll end for today. So we'll sit for just a few breaths.